You are listening to the Effective Statistician Podcast, the weekly podcast with Alexander Schacht and Benjamin Pieske, designed to help you reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients while having a great work-life balance. In addition to our premium courses on the Effective Statistician Academy, we also have lots of free resources for you across all kind of different topics within that academy. Head over to theeffectivestatistician.com and find the academy and much more for you to become an effective statistician. I'm producing this podcast in association with PSI, a community dedicated to leading and promoting the use of statistics within the healthcare industry for the benefit of patients. Join PSI today to further develop your statistical capabilities with access to the ever-growing video on demand content library, free registration to all PSI webinars, and much, much more. Head over to the PSI website at psiweb.org to learn more about PSI activities and become a PSI member today.
Hello, and welcome to the Friday edition of The Effective Statistician. My name's Alan Bedding, and in these Friday episodes, I'll explore things that can help a statistician become more effective. What I will talk about today is imposter syndrome. I wonder how my saying those words has made you feel. Has it made you defensive? For example, you might say, I don't have imposter syndrome, so why should I listen to this podcast? Or it's make you feel like, aha, that is me. Maybe I can learn something here. And by the way, I'm not going to judge in any way whatsoever. I'm just going to be talking about my thoughts on how you can manage imposter syndrome. So first of all, I want to confess that I've always struggled with imposter syndrome. I've often feel like I'm a statistician, that somebody else knows more than me. I'm a coach, that somebody can coach better than me. I'm a leader, but somebody else can lead better than me and is more confident than me, and so on and so on. It's part of my brain that's telling me I'm not good enough. I'm not confident to do this particular piece of work. And Professor Steve Peters, in his fantastic book, The Chimp Paradox, talks about this as being the chimp part of your brain. Your brain is made up of several parts, and it's your chimp that's actually now telling you're not good enough and therefore affecting your confidence. And bear in mind, the chimp always acts faster than the human part of the brain. And in the book, he talks about different measures which we can take to actually bring in that more human part of the brain. But what the chimp is doing in this sort of situation is constantly comparing to other things. Because in the chimp's world is a jungle and it's dangerous. It's still living in that jungle. And it's saying, if somebody is more confident or they assume they're better, then they might just, if you don't assume they're better, they might just turn around and say, yeah, I am better and I'm going to kill you. Yeah, it sounds stupid, and it is. But that's how the chimp part of the brain works. So how do we overcome this? And I mentioned that Professor Peters mentions a couple of techniques in his book. Here's the thing. I mentioned comparing. Imposter syndrome comes from that comparison. X is better than me. And what we're doing is we're allowing our chimp, or the chimp part of our brain, to take that control of our brain. So what we need to do is slow down. I've been talking quite fast up to this point. Now I'm going to slow down. The reason I'm slowing down is I'm catching myself and I'm saying, okay, what do I need to do to put in the human part of my brain? If we allow the chimp to take control and that becomes our automatic response, what Professor Peters talks about is putting a gremlin into the computer part of our brain. So that becomes this default response. What I can do is if I slow myself down, imagine maybe there's a big pause button there. Slow myself down. And when I catch myself saying, what do I lack that this person has? I then can bring in a so-called autopilot, which is my brain's computer then saying, if I feel like an imposter, I need to stop and think. I need to stop and think, what do I have that means I deserve to be here? That could be one way of doing it. I'm not suggesting that's the only way. You need to come up with your own way of thinking about this. Often what I do is if I think there's going to be an imposter syndrome occurring during a meeting or during a particular difficult coaching conversation, I'll prepare myself in advance to make sure that situation can be addressed and can be managed. So imposter syndrome is there. It's also very common. It's surprising how many people have imposter syndrome. And probably they're quite right to have imposter syndrome. It's common among many leaders, especially as they take on higher responsibilities, because what they're doing is they're stepping outside of their comfort zone. And once you're outside of your comfort zone, that's where the chimp kicks in. It's there to protect you. But stepping outside of our comfort zone is good. And that's how we develop as a person. We step outside our comfort zone. But it does bring on those feelings of imposter syndrome. Most talented leaders feel like they don't deserve to be here. And I've heard this a number of times from a number of leaders. They feel they're not qualified. They haven't done this before. But yeah, all of those aspects come into this thinking. And that self-doubt then can hinder their decision-making. So if they're now having self-doubt about themselves, they might start to think, like, I don't really want to make that decision because it might make me look more of an imposter. It limits collaboration because if imposter syndrome, you don't want to collaborate with somebody just in case they might be better than you. So leaders have to use techniques to really manage their imposter syndrome. You never may never get over it, but you need to manage it. And I recently wrote a LinkedIn post about a number of these things that can help with imposter syndrome. I mentioned about slowing down first. That, to me, is the most important thing. Slow down, take a pause, take a breath, and then say, think to yourself, why am I getting this imposter syndrome? So with that pause, the first thing you can do is reflect and get some clarity and have a safe space to explore what's happening. So, for example, if you've been in a meeting and had this imposter syndrome, you may want to take that outside of that meeting, after that meeting, and think to yourself, what's my limiting belief here? And explore that limiting belief. Now, you can do this on your own. You could do it with a colleague. You could do it with a trusted colleague. You could do it with a coach. You could do it with a mentor. I'm not suggesting the way you should do this. I'm saying it might be useful to do this. And through that reflection and taking that time to reflect, you can uncover hidden sources of self-doubt. And then you could think about, well, what are the strengths that are going to address this? And you might be overlooking some strengths, and that's what's leading to the self-doubt. So with this realization, you can then explore ways of overcoming those limiting beliefs. Secondly, you could recognize the patterns of success that challenge your feelings of inadequacy. Comparing is a classic one. But what else could there be in this frame of reference? There is often a reflection on negative experiences. When we look back and we do a timeline exercise or something like that, we often think of the negative experiences. They tend to come to the fore because it is the chimp again that's bringing those to the fore. But what about if we can reframe these experiences and ask the question, what have I learned from that experience? All of a sudden, you've turned that negative experience into a positive one. So I'd encourage you to look at any negative experience as a learning exercise and take out the word failure. Don't call it a failure. And if you think about what a failure, if you think about it's a failure, then why don't you reframe fail as the first attempt in learning? So reframe failure or negative experiences into something that could be positive. Lastly, you can expand your mindset. Think about your life and where you've already developed. What you're doing here now is saying, I haven't got a fixed mindset. I don't have what Carol Dweck calls the fixed mindset of what I was born with, but I have what she calls a growth mindset. And we have growth mindsets all the way through our life and think about how what we've learned so far, what else can we learn? What can we learn about ourselves? An exercise I use with people I coach is the following. I ask them to write down the number of successes they've had in their life, which will match the amount of their age. So, for example, if a person is 30 years old, they write down 30 successes from their lives. This can be any success. It doesn't have to be work-related. So, for example, if you've passed an exam when you were 16, if you passed your O-levels, GCSEs, your A-levels, they are a success. Class those as one success, though. You passed a load of exams, that's one success. Yes, you could say I passed 10 exams, that's 10 successes. I would encourage you to turn that as one success. Another one could be you captained a sports team that won a single game. List that as a success. You captained that team. If you scored, even better. The more you list, the more you start to see that you're already a success. You're already a success, so why not take that further? There's another version of this, which is presented by Dr. Steve Ball, who did a lot of work with the British Olympic team. And it involves looking at those successes as mountain peaks. So the mountain peaks are representative of what you've climbed and how you've climbed already. If I get somebody to do this during a coaching session, I might ask the question, what are those words telling you? Or what are you learning from writing this list? Or as you see this list, what are you learning from that? What are you learning about yourself? I'll also be looking at the person's body language. And I'll comment on it. If the shifts in their thinking, or I think the shifts in their thinking, it might be related to what they've written. For example, if they pull a face when they write a certain, when they make a sermon, I might say, what was that face? So it's, again, it's more about getting realizations. The one thing this will show is that you are already okay. You are already a success. You are already fantastic. And in most cases, you are already brilliant. There is so much you are brilliant in. And when you compare yourself to others, you don't know their world. They are already brilliant in their world, but they might have lacking confidence in other things. So what all this is doing is building that confidence. That confidence, as it grows, it then decreases the imposter syndrome. What you are doing is climbing from the so-called ladder of perception. You're climbing that ladder from being consciously incompetent in your head, you're consciously incompetent, to becoming consciously competent. So the more consciously competent you become, you can then step into the unconsciously being competent. If you think about when you drive a car, if you're a decent driver, or you feel you're a decent driver, you don't have to think about being a good driver. You don't have to feel about being a good walker. You don't have to feel about good being a good speaker. They are all things that become competent in what we do. One thing that can impact our imposter is feedback. If we get negative feedback, we all of a sudden assume that person doesn't like me. Again, here's the chin coming in here. That person doesn't like me because they've given me bad feedback. Given, I always assume, is positive because it is that person's point of view. Whether you like it or not, it's somebody else's point of view, not your own. But feedback is a gift. There's an old saying that feedback is a gift. And it is, because it's somebody else's perception of you. If you want a bit more thoughts about feedback, go and look at something called the Jahari's Window, which talks about what somebody else knows and you don't know. Feedback, given positively or given, is always positive and always is a thought of another person. So there you have it. Imposter syndrome is real. Don't ignore it. But don't assume that you're the only person having imposter syndrome. I've lost count of the number of people I've coached who come to me with imposter syndrome. Most people have it, even if they don't admit it. And maybe some of those people who don't admit it might have stronger imposter syndrome because what they're trying to do is negate or take away the thought you might feel how they have imposter syndrome. But it is manageable. Do things that build your confidence. Trust yourself to do these things and become more confident in your role. So when you feel like your imposter syndrome is creeping in, stop, pause, step back, think about what I've talked about in this podcast episode, and think about how good you really are. You are a success. You are already brilliant. Think about that, and think about that and how that then alleviates your imposter syndrome. I'm hoping this resonates with people. If it has, please message me or message the podcast or put something on LinkedIn that says this is really resonating with you. And if you enjoyed what you've heard today, please feel free to subscribe to the Effective Statistician podcast and subscribe to this newsletter. One of the things as we move forward with these Friday episodes is I'm going to take topics and discuss them with guests, similar to how Alexander does on the main podcast. So if you'd like to be one of those guests, please email Alexander at the Effective Statistician. The link will be in the show notes. Thank you very much for listening.
This show was created in association with PSI. Thanks to Rain and her team at VVS who helped with the show in the background, and thank you for listening. Reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients. Just be an effective statistician.